Delusions of Grandeur. The Journey Into podcast is proud to present this journey into a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. A journey into Star Wars. Join Marshall Latham and Rish Outfield as we explore this world of mystery and adventure, featuring many delusions of grandeur.
I'm out of it for a little while. Everybody gets delusions of grandeur.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Delusions of Grandeur here on the Journey Into podcast. This is where we talk about Star Wars. And my name is Marshall Latham, and as always, I'm here with Rish Outfield. And yeah, it's time to talk about the Book of Boba Fett. Not just Boba Fett, but the Book of Boba Fett.
What does that mean, the Book of Boba Fett?
I'm not quite sure if it's going for like a, you know, like a biblical thing or a historical, you know.
Well, I thought about that. The Book of Boba Fett, it does sound like a biblical reference. And I heard somebody the other day say that they thought that there were lots of parallels between the story of Moses and the story of Boba Fett in that first episode. Did you pick up on any of that?
No, not Moses. I was...
Okay. Me either. To me, it really feels like John Dunbar from Dances with Wolves to me.
Yeah, Dances with Wolves. Yeah, and then the second episode threw a little bit of Lawrence of Arabia in there.
Mm. But anyhow, Stranger in a Strange Land was the name of the first episode. And I always think of the Robert Heinlein novel with that title. But I guess that phrase, Stranger in a Strange Land, is from the Book of Exodus.
Right.
And Moses refers to himself as that. And so maybe that's where people are getting the Moses parallel on that. The second episode was called The Tribes of Tatooine. Is there a Moses parallel with that at all that you can think of?
Not that I can think of, no.
I mean, obviously not Tatooine, but does Moses have anything to do with the tribes of Israel?
Well, you know, he leads Israel as a people out of Egypt, of course, but I don't know. I'm going to have to watch it again now with that in mind. I guess I wasn't thinking...
Well, you know, I don't know that it's really there.
Yeah.
But, for example, the Richard Donner Superman movie, there are lots of moments where you can say, okay, this feels like baby Moses being put in a basket and
right.
set adrift in the Nile and stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then there are moments like where Jor-El says, and for this I have given them you, my only son. Where you go, oh, this isn't Moses at all. This is something, you know. But I didn't notice these things. And if every single episode has a semi-biblical title, then maybe, yeah, that's what it is all about.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't see it, though. So now I'll have to watch for it.
Okay. Well, that's all right. I these are things that when you hear somebody say it, and people always say things with such a surety that, oh, no, this is totally going in this direction, or this is this, and that is that. Seagull. The
Dinglehopper.
Some of the references actually went over my head because like the I don't know what you would call them, the aliens that were trying to take the train in episode 2, I guess, are from the Clone Wars cartoon, and I missed that because I've not watched the Clone Wars cartoon. And
well, they're also from Solo. They're the pike that were on Kessel, if you remember those guys.
Is Kessel where the Wookiees were being held?
Yeah, that's where they were getting the spice from, or the
okay.
whatever, the raw stuff. But yeah, those were all the pikes. They had the same little head coverings or whatever.
And then there's another character that I didn't recognize, but the people who did really recognized him. And I was a little jealous, and I wondered if you had recognized him. But we'll get to that when we start talking about that episode. But very briefly, I mean, obviously we're going to spoil everything that could be spoiled in these episodes. But a lot of times we'll have Big Anklevich on the show, or we'll have Renee Chambliss on the show. And I did hear from Renee, and she hasn't yet watched The Book of Boba Fett.
Okay.
And so she may have an advantage, because I think I would have enjoyed the show better if I could have watched three or four in a row.
To get a feel for it, kind of thing.
Well, just because of the way it's split, it reminds me of Lost. Do you remember how Lost would focus on a character in every episode, and a lot of the episode would be them on the island in the present day, and then the rest of the episode would be a flashback to earlier in that character's life, showing you who they were and where they came from and what secret they have. If you recall, all of them had a secret.
Oh, yes.
That reminded me of that. When we got flashbacks in the second episode, I was like, oh, maybe we'll get flashbacks in every single one. And that pleased me because I really loved Lost. I thought that was one of the best shows of the 21st century. And part of it was that ability to say, okay, this episode is just going to focus on Claire. We're going to find out all about her and her past and all that stuff. And then it will lead to some fun revelation or some shocking twist or something that will be resolved later. And I found that to be a very interesting, unusual way of doing a TV show.
Yeah. Well, it also reminds me of Arrow.
Oh, yeah, Arrow did that.
CW. I mean, it kind of got worn out by the eighth season, but those first couple seasons, it was a really good way to tell the story.
I forgot about that, but you're right. Yeah, Arrow would flash back to his training and his... he was stuck on an island, right, also?
Yes, he was.
He had a plane crash and he was presumed dead, and they didn't tell you everything that had happened and how he had gotten back. You had to sit and watch episode after episode.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's a good reminder. Anyway, we're just going to be talking about the first two episodes in this.
Correct.
Stranger in a Strange Land and The Tribes of Tatooine.
Yeah, I had was thinking of a way to kind of change up our after shows here, or our retrospectives of these. And one of the ideas I had, it's stolen from another podcast, is to ask each other questions about the episode. But I don't think either of us are prepared for that tonight. But I guess one question that I was thinking of was, by the time we watch The Book of Boba Fett and then we watch Kenobi, are we going to be sick and tired of Tatooine?
Well, that's a great question. For me, no, because what I most liked about the first episode was just seeing all this familiar stuff again, seeing aliens, seeing species, seeing locations or things that reminded me of the original trilogy. And I guess Mos Espa was where they found little Anakin in Phantom Menace.
Yeah.
I love the world or worlds of Star Wars. And that's what I appreciated about the first episode. The second episode, I appreciated it for itself. I just felt like it was a story well told. But how about you? How sick are you going to be of Tatooine?
I'm fine. I don't think I will be. I mean, it depends if we have Kenobi, you know, learning and working with the Sand People as well, the Tusken Raiders. But I'm sure they'll be a part of it, but I don't know if he'll be spending a lot of his time with them. But no, I mean, I like Tatooine. There's enough stuff going on there, but there is a lot of sand. So
yeah, we all know somebody that hates sand.
Maybe we can talk about these in terms of, like, what do you want to just focus on the present and talk about that in the two episodes? Because there's not too much there. And then go into the flashback stuff.
Okay, that works.
Okay. So in the first episode, yeah, you know, just like we saw at the end, The Mandalorian Season 2, we pretty much have Boba Fett and Fennec Shand taking over Jabba's palace and, I guess, all of his operations. And so the opening scene, we see several people coming to him and paying their tribute to him as the new crime boss, I guess. They have a name for it, but I always get it wrong. So like Damon or something like that.
Yeah, it's something like that. I started with a D, like Diam or something like that.
Yeah, and I guess it's a Japanese term. I don't know.
Oh, is it? Okay. I just assumed it was like a Hutties gangster thing.
But I guess One of the characters from Return of the Jedi that I totally forgot about until I saw him was the droid that's talking and introducing everybody. It's AD-8 that we saw torturing a poor gonk droid in Return of the Jedi. And he doesn't say anything in that movie, so it's kind of weird to see him talk. But I thought that was pretty cool to see that that droid fleshed out a little bit for us here.
Yeah, and he was done practically also. You could tell that he was a puppet or maybe a marionette kind of thing, which I always prefer to an obviously CG character. And plus, it's got to be cheaper, right?
It's got to be, yeah.
Maybe not. Maybe nowadays CG is super easy to do. Yeah, he's voiced by Matt Berry, who is a British actor, a comic actor who I know from the show What We Do in the Shadows.
Oh.
He's one of the leads in that, and he's great. And it's funny because at the very beginning, makes some suggestion about, you know, torture. Maybe we should torture these guys. And I loved that. It reminded me of 000, how he was a protocol droid.
Yeah.
Who, just like C-3PO spoke a zillion languages, 000 knew a zillion ways to torture people.
Yep. Yeah, and it's interesting. I wonder, you know, people are showing up from the comics and stuff like that. I wonder if those guys will show up at some point. So several people are coming to visit him. There's an Aqualish that we see that's, or a couple of them that are talking to him. And they leave, and then a Transdosian comes. And I swear he said his name was Bosk, but it's not Bosk. It's some other Transdosian, right?
Well, according to the IMDb, its name is Doc Strassi, the leader of the Trandoshans. And I didn't catch that he was Bosk.
Yeah, okay. That's good. I guess I was just hoping. But then the voice seemed weird. I'm like, that doesn't sound like Bosk. But then I guess we've never heard him speak.
We heard him sort of growl. He did speak, I'm assuming, in the Clone Wars episodes.
Oh, that's true.
And I believe in those Clone Wars episodes, he was hanging out with Kid Boba Fett.
He was, yeah.
So definitely they know each other.
Yeah.
A little bit of trivia is that Robert Rodriguez voiced that Trandoshan.
Oh, he did. Okay. And that's the first time we've heard one speak, right? There were Transdosians in Mandalorian, but I think they were always just silent.
They were silent, yeah.
I guess the only other character of note there is the major domo of the mayor of Mos Espa who comes. And
yeah, he's a super slippery dude. He's one of those like super political.
Yeah.
Like he's got an answer for everything. And yeah, there was something utterly slimy about him. And unlike Bib Fortuna, who spoke broken English at best, he's got like a normal American accent. And he's just like, oh, you know, the mayor says this. And oh, it would be nice if this, you know, that kind of thing. Where he's non-committal, but everything could be taken as like a threat. Everything could be taken as an insult. But it's all under the surface kind of thing. And yeah, the impression that we get is that the mayor of Mos Espa, he wanted Boba Fett to pay tribute to him rather than the other way around.
Right.
And he didn't care enough to show up in person. He just sent his spokesman, which I mean, just shows you that there's going to be a power struggle or there's somebody that does not respect what's going on. The ones that come before Boba Fett are all really subservient, the way that someone would be to Jabba. They bring him money. We get these two Gamorrean guards that used to be faithful to Jabba and then were faithful to Bib Fortuna and now say they'll be faithful to Boba Fett.
And they are, as far as we can tell.
Yeah, they seem to be really, really loyal, and I like that about them. And I also like that these were not slim Gamorreans like we saw in Mandalorian. I don't need that. I don't need slim pig people.
Yeah, they're not quite as big as the ones with Jabba from Return of the Jedi, but yeah, they're on the hefty side for sure. And it's just cool to see him, you know, have the Gamorrean guards there. One of the things that I thought was funny was he goes into Mos Espa to visit his different places where, you know, he rules or whatever. And one of them is this, is it the Paradise? Oh, no, it's Sanctuary. That's the bar that he goes to that supposedly is part of his operation. But everybody keeps expecting him to be carried by others, you know, like Jabba was, where everywhere he went, he was carried. And they're surprised that he's just walking through the streets of Mos Espa. But he meets the, I guess, the owner or maybe the runner of the establishment. And her name is Garza Fwip. And she's played by Jennifer.
No. What is her real... Dude, come on, you can't pull one over on me. Nobody's name is Garza Fwip.
That's what it says here.
All right, who plays her?
It's not quite Babu Freak, but... But Jennifer Beals actually plays her, and she's Twi'lek. But there's this like supermodel male Twi'lek there as well. I thought that was kind of interesting. We haven't seen, usually if it's a scantily clad Twi'lek, it's a female, but they had a male there as well. So that was kind of interesting.
Well, yeah, I think that's consistent. There seems to be a sexual nature to the Twi'lek species. They except for Bib Fortuna, they tend to be really attractive and kind of like the Orions on Star Trek.
That's true, yeah.
That's interesting. And the weird thing is, so Jennifer Beals was acting when you and I were kids. We know her from Flashdance and...
Flashdance, yeah.
And The Bride, did you see that, where Sting was Baron Frankenstein? And yet, she doesn't look old at all. Somehow, she just went away for 30 years. And now she's back.
Yeah.
But yes, she was exactly as you would expect. Like, very, very respectful to Fett and asks if she can polish his helmet, is I think what she says, but I don't know.
She does. She asks, they ask him both, would you like us to polish your helmet?
Yeah, and you know, I've gone in a bar and asked if there's a place where I could get my helmet polished before, and they threw me out. But with her, they take his helmet and they give it back to him, and it's full of coins.
Yeah.
It's some kind of tribute in that way, too. It's like a, you know, he owns the establishment, so every dollar that they make, he gets some of that.
Yeah.
My uncle lived in Vegas, and he worked for some of the casinos, and he said that stuff still goes on, that you were expected, especially if, you know, you got really big tips and stuff, you were expected to save some of that, and maybe they wouldn't ask for it, but if they did, you handed that over. And I was like, come on, really? Nowadays? And he's like, yeah, that's just how it is.
Well, when I was over in China, there were plenty of establishments that were trying to polish your helmet. But...
All right. Well, I will update my passport.
But, you know, some of those are pretty sketchy. So
they leave the cantina. Is it not a cantina? Is it a cantina? They leave the nightclub, let's say. Oh, and shoot, we should talk about who was in that nightclub that we recognized.
Oh, yeah. Good old Max Rebo showed up. He was playing in the band there.
Yeah, it's cool because he was on the sail barge, which blew up. And so, you know, I could hear somebody just assuming that he died there. Also was Figuren Dan,
right,
from the Cantina band in a new Star Wars.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure if that was obviously he was a Bith, but I wasn't sure if it was an actual member of the band.
I don't know either. I just assumed that it was him, because why wouldn't it be? And then I saw Rex, DJ Rex from Star Tours.
Yeah.
And I guess he's at the Galaxy's Edge now at Disneyland as a DJ, and it was the same droid.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. And he was handing out chips or something like that for the gambling. You know, every show has to have its cantina, right?
So far, like I said, that's the thing I liked the most about the first episode, is constantly seeing familiar species and faces. And one thing that I saw in both episodes was Constable Zuvio was there in Mos Espa. And we saw him in Mandalorian as well. And I just think that that's great, because this guy that was put in Force Awakens and then his scenes were deleted, which made his action figure the most worthless of them all, is suddenly in all of this stuff, which is kind of a redeeming factor. I mean, I still would never buy a Constable Zuvio figure if I saw one. But it's funny. Every time I see him, I go, oh, this is Constable Zuvio. Yeah, and you have to do that too now, next episode.
Hey, there he is. Yeah, because I guess I missed him. So I'll be looking for him now.
Yeah, well, he was in the scene where they leave. They leave the nightclub and immediately they're set upon by assassins. And how many would you say there were?
Oh, there was like, what, 7 of them probably?
Yeah, they're in red, in some kind of leather. They have a mask that covers everything but like their eyes. They seem to be human. And they were there to kill Boba Fett. And I'm assuming Fennec Shand as well. But she holds her own. She's really acrobatic and does like kicks and jumps and stuff. And she would do that stuff on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., right? And so it must just be that Ming-Na Wen is capable of doing all this stuff. As we said years ago, she's older than both of us. And yeah, sometimes I'm winded going upstairs, but she is able to do like drop kicks and flip arounds and jump on a shield and knock a guy down as he's swinging at her.
Yeah, I'm sure they have stunt doubles too, but I think she probably does a lot of it herself. But yeah, so they get attacked by these guys and they have shields and these spear type things. And they circle them and try to trap them in. But, you know, they fight their way out of it. He gets, the little spears or whatever shock him. And so, you know, they do get hit by a shock every now and then. And probably Boba Fett more than Fennec Shand. But as soon as the fight's over, there's only like two of these assassins left. And they go running on the tops of buildings doing their parkour. And he sends Fennec Shand after them, but tells him to keep him alive. But then he tells the Gamorrean guards to get him back to the palace so he can get back in the Bacta pods or whatever that he's... In the very beginning of the episode, we see him in one of these Bacta pods, and that's where he's having the flashbacks. So that's kind of an interesting thing. So Fennec is able to capture one of them alive. And that was kind of at the end of the first episode. And then in the beginning of the second episode, she's bringing him, you know, up to the palace. They're walking back to the palace. And she brings him in front of Boba Fett. And they interrogate him, trying to get him to say, you know, who sent you to kill us? And he won't say anything at first.
Yeah, he's really stoic. And I'm sure 8D8 would have loved to be able to torture him.
Yeah. Give him a hot foot.
But what they do is they flip the trap door. So Fennec Shand says something like, you know, if you won't talk to us, then maybe you'll talk to the Rancor. And they push the button. He drops down into the Rancor pit. And the dais moves forward so they can watch, just like happened in Jedi with Jabba's dais. Well, it's the same dais.
Yeah.
And so the guy drops down there and he freaks out. Obviously, he has heard of the Rancor. And so he tells them, he says...
And the big gate starts to open.
Right. That's. He says, the mayor sent me. Then nothing comes out of the gate because some farm boy with delusions of grandeur killed the Rancor. You know, it was a ploy, I guess, and it worked.
Yeah.
So they know who was behind, or they assume they know who was behind the assassination attempt. So they take this prisoner to the mayor's office, and which is the mayor's palace, mayor's, what do you want to call it? Headquarters, let's say that. Of course, there's a secretary that says, oh, the mayor's a very busy man. You can't talk to him. No, there was nobody with that accent that belongs in the prequels. But yeah, he's like, oh, he's indisposed, he can't be bothered. And Boba Fett and Shand just brush right past. They burst into the mayor's office, and the mayor is a
Ithorian, right?
Ithorian, thank you. I've been really lacking on some of these species names today. I think of him as a hammerhead, just as you said something in the first episode, and I had to say, well, what is that? Oh, that's a walrus man.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the Aqualish.
Yeah, I'm not quite there with the actual West End Games naming system. So, like, a Quarren is still a squid head to me, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a hammerhead, the mayor, and I believe the character's name is Mock Shays. Does that sound right?
Mock Shays. Yeah, that's how I would say it. Yeah.
And this is something I think that we saw on Bad Batch in the cartoon, but I'd never seen it in live action. It speaks in its language. The same thing that the one in the cantina in 77 speaks, but there's a translator machine hooked to the side of its head that translates in basic what it says. And I just loved that. What a brilliant idea.
Yeah.
It keeps the alienness of this species in the same way that Jabba only speaking Huttese, except for Jedi mind trick, right?
Yeah.
Keeps the alienness of him in a way that the one from where we were talking about in the last episode, the cartoon, it sounded so buffoonish. It sounded like a cartoon. There is something about the invented language or the unfamiliar way of communication that puts a barrier between us as viewers and that character. We can't know them. We can't understand. You know, Chewbacca speaking a different language makes him an other in a way that if he just spoke English, he wouldn't be.
Yep. But I believe the basic voice, the translator voice, for the mayor was also Robert Rodriguez.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So that's kind of cool.
Interesting. But yeah, he didn't direct that episode, right? He just directed the first one?
That's correct, yeah.
I didn't know that he did the voice. I try to watch the credits, but does your Disney Plus do this? It will shrink the screen when it wants to.
Yes.
When it decides, okay, you're done watching, you don't need to see these names. Not only will it shrink it, but it will like go ahead and say, I'm going to play whatever I want now. So I'm going to play this documentary about the history of Boba Fett now, unless you stop me.
So you have to back it up.
Does yours do that?
Yeah.
I hate that. I've always really enjoyed the credits and listening to the music and seeing the names. And maybe I'm 1 in 100 people because of that. Like when we went and saw Spider-Man the other day, my nephew, who is 11 now, was just like, oh, please, please don't make us sit through this. And I was like, look, there is always something cool to watch in a Marvel movie at the end. And he's like, it's not worth it. Oh, I don't understand. To just like look at the words and listen to music for 3 minutes or 4 minutes is torture to him. ADHD has something to do with it.
Yeah, it's that patience. You gotta have the patience for it. But yeah, one of my sons, he's the same way. But especially with, you know, this series and The Mandalorian, they show all the concept art during the ending credits. And that's pretty cool, too. I love seeing that.
Yeah, because you're able to see how they envisioned it and compare it to what ended up on the screen. And sometimes it's exactly the same. But other times you go, oh, hey, look, they changed the color of this. Or, oh, this is much bigger. Or, oh, there were supposed to be 6 of those and there were only 2 in the actual production. That stuff is really interesting. I whoever came up with the let's show off the concept art thing, it's not something I've ever seen before in any entertainment.
Yeah, I'm glad they continued that because Mandalorian did the same thing. So that's kind of cool.
So we're back in the mayor's office. The mayor says that he did not send this guy and that the guy is part of some kind of assassin guild that I had never heard of.
The Night Wind.
Night Wind? Is that what you said?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. Sometimes if I eat chili, okay, anyhow.
I have a bad case of the night winds, yes. Yeah, so the mayor claims innocence, but he also has the assassin killed by one of his guards, so.
Yeah, that seems sketchy to me, doesn't it? To you, it's just like, oh, how dare this guy lie, blam. Now we'll never have to hear any more of his lies. That kind of thing is just, yeah, or we won't be able to hear his evidence that he was telling the truth.
Exactly. But he does say you should question who might not want you in power or something like that. He You know, he says, you should probably be looking elsewhere or worried about something else than me. So that kind of gives him a second thought. And then I think they go back to the sanctuary.
The nightclub. Okay.
Nightclub thing, yeah. And he asks, Garza Fwip.
Come on. Fool me once, shame on you.
I don't want to call her Jennifer Beals because, you know.
Okay, all right. It's just going to be hard for me to get used to that name. But did you get the impression that she was not as happy to see them the second time they showed up?
Yeah, it seemed like she was kind of upset that they came back again. You know, she probably figured he came to check it out and then he wouldn't come back.
Yeah, I got that impression too. It's like, we paid you off, now what do you want? Kind of thing. But it also seemed really suspicious to me. They go in there and they come right out and say, right? The mayor said that we should come here and ask you what you know about these assassins, right?
Yeah.
And she says, she mentions the twins. And I didn't know what that was. Did you know who she was referring to when she said the twins?
I did not.
Okay. Because I maybe this was from the cartoons. Maybe this is from the Expanded Universe. It's not called Expanded Universe anymore, but you know what I mean.
Yeah. So they as they're talking to her, they hear drum beats. And so they go outside to see what's going on. And being lifted on this huge, humongous platform by, I don't know, how would you say, like 20 guys or something?
Oh,
like
I
that?
Wish it were 20. I feel like it was like 8 guys had to carry this 2-ton dais. Litter, that's the word I'm looking for. It's a litter.
Litter, yeah, I couldn't remember the term either.
And it's got 2 huts on it. And these are Jabba's cousins, right?
Well, I think so. I didn't recognize the twins from any of the Clone Wars cartoons. And a couple things that I've listened to, people say, no, they weren't part of the Hutt Council or whatever. So these are new characters, I think.
Well, but all right, sorry. Last episode, the Truman Capote thing. I can't even do an impression. It sucked so badly. The Clone Wars hut that was Jabba's uncle that we kept playing clips of.
Oh, Zero the Hut?
Zero. Would he be the father of these two?
Oh, I guess he could be. Yeah, they didn't even say anything about that. So, yeah.
But one was male and one was female.
Yes.
And they both speak Huttese. The thing is, except for Gardula, I had not seen a hut in a movie. It's 1999, you know? Gardula the Hut shows up and you see Jabba.
Right.
And so it was really interesting. You know, they're definitely the same species, but they're slightly different. They still looked pretty dang CG to me, but I guess that's just a mental block that I'm going to have to resign myself.
Yeah. I mean, they're definitely better than what we saw in the special editions, but there is just that little bit of polish or whatever that shows up. Because I just watched the opening of Return of the Jedi again the other night, because we were talking about Jabba in our last episode. And so I wanted to watch that again. And yeah, it's just amazing the way they pulled that off. So to see it again in CG.
Well, yeah, just today I saw him eat the frog. Somebody had put a clip, because I guess that litter had the same bowl that Jabba had on it.
Yeah.
And when he's eating the frog, you can see like his cheeks puff out from taking a breath or something like that. And I was just like, wow, I've never noticed that before. That somebody with a bellows inside or whatever was making his face breathe in and out. And I just, yeah, I love Jabba. I would love... Have you ever gone to a con where they've had a life-sized Jabba the Hutt?
I have not, no.
I've gone to a few, and, you know, they're obviously just stationary and they're just plastic. Because, I mean, even rubber would be too heavy, I think, to move around.
Yeah.
But Jabba has always seemed so alive to me. He seems like a character, and he seems to have personality. And these two on the litter did have personality. You could definitely see a relationship between the two, and they were sort of
wrapped around each other in kind of a gross way. Part of me wondered if they were conjoined twins, but I don't think so. They're different color. I guess you could be different colors, right?
Yeah, there's variation in the colors.
But I did wonder if they were from the books or from the cartoon, and you say they're not, so...
As far as I know, from what I've heard, and I didn't remember them from the cartoon, so, yeah.
And they have tattoos on their chins, and if I recall, Jabba had a tattoo on his tail, and which I probably only know because of toys having a tattoo on them.
Oh, but, sure. Yeah, I was gonna say I don't remember that, but the one funny thing that made me laugh when the Hutts were talking was the male Hutt or whatever. He was like wiping the sweat off of his head or face, but he was using one of the little animals that he would eat. It was like a little mouse or whatever they call those things, and he was wiping his face with that. So that was kind of funny.
Did they give names to these two characters?
I don't think they did. I think
okay, so they just call them the twins. Interesting.
Yeah.
Anyway, they are there to claim Tatooine for themselves. Maybe it's not even Tatooine. Maybe it's the whole criminal syndicate that Jabba ran.
Yeah.
And Bib Fortuna. Do you assume that he usurped it, or he was next in command, or were the twins running the show anyway, and Bib Fortuna was their representative?
Yeah, it could be, or they just hadn't got there yet. But that's a long time. What, 5 years between, or maybe 6 years at this point, between Return of the Jedi and when this is taking place. So, yeah, they would have had to either had an agreement with Bib Fortuna or something.
They had said, they made some line that the twins never leave Nal Hutta. And so maybe that's what has been going on for 6 years, is Bib Fortuna was in charge nominally and sending enormous amounts of money back to the Hutt homeworld for these two.
Right.
And now that Bib is dead, these two say, oh, well, we'll have to do this ourselves, as loath as we are to get on a starship and go to some desert world.
Yeah.
So they threaten Boba Fett. And here's the part. Oh, my gosh. This was the coolest thing, dude. Out steps this black Wookiee bounty hunter. And I don't know about you. Maybe you didn't have the same visceral reaction to this guy as I did. But I just thought he was the coolest looking guy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's pretty cool.
He looks at Boba Fett and says something in Wookiee. And Boba Fett knows who he is. He said, I thought you'd be in some kind of fighting pits on some other planet.
Right.
And the Wookiee like growls and he arches his eyebrow. And I noticed this. And I was just like, that is so cool. You know, obviously like he's wearing a mask. It's a man with a prosthetic. But the eyebrow arched. And I wondered, did the guy in the mask just do that? Or did they have to have like some kind of mechanism to make the eyebrow do that?
Oh yeah. But
he's got these crazy creepy like yellow eyes. I loved this guy, and I didn't know who he was, but did you?
I recognized him because I had, but I didn't know his name. But I'm like, oh, I bet you this is the Wookiee from the Darth Vader comics, because there was, you know, he would deal with different bounty hunters for different things or whatever. And I read that first, I don't know, 5 to 10 issues. And the name of the character is Black Kersantan. So I thought it was him because I recognized the black fur and all that kind of stuff. So I figured they were bringing him back as another bounty hunter. But then, of course, I got online afterwards and everybody's going nuts saying, oh, did you see him? Did you see Black Kersantan on Book of Boba Fett? And they were just going nuts.
So. Well, I went nuts too. And yeah, I didn't know Black Kersantan, if I'm saying it right. I think they say his name.
I don't know if they did or not.
Oh, see, I thought that they did. I need to watch the episode again. And yeah, that's something that I complained about when we first started recording, is I meant to watch it so we could go into detail. And we are going into detail anyway. I really enjoyed this second episode. And yeah, they don't have a confrontation, but the threatening words are thrown about.
Yeah, there's no resolution or anything, but it's pretty much them just, I guess, staking their claim and showing their cards a little bit. And I'm sure we'll see more of the twins and Black Kersantan. But yeah, how cool would it be to play something like, you know, to be an actor? I mean, maybe all that stuff would be hard to act in, but it'd be pretty fun to be part of that, I think.
Yeah, this guy, I mean, I don't know how tall he was, but he was broad. He seemed way wider than Chewbacca was. You know, Chewie is just very, very tall and almost lanky.
Yeah.
Like, he's got super long arms, but they don't seem very wide. And this one was just like a muscular, it was like Dwayne the Rock Johnson was under that costume.
Yeah. Maybe that's why he raised his eyebrow.
Oh, no, you're right. I don't, that's great, man. I wish that I had intended for that to be the reference.
So, yeah, he's played by Cary Jones, which I don't recognize that name, but...
I don't either, but is he just a stuntman?
I'm not sure. I'm just looking at the cast.
Okay.
Names.
But all the rest of the two episodes is flashback. And I'd say that the first episode was about 50-50.
Yes.
Present and flashback. And episode two, I'd say, was about a third and two-thirds, or would you say a quarter and three-quarters?
I'd say a quarter. There was not very much progress on the modern day Tatooine stuff. It was pretty much all flashback. But it was a longer episode, too. It was like 52, 53 minutes or something like that.
Oh, okay. I didn't notice.
So they had a lot of stuff in the flashback. And the, I think I said it at the beginning, but the device that they use for the flashback scenes is whenever he's in this Bacta pod. And man, I want to get myself a Bacta pod. That looks pretty cool.
Well, he has a reason to be in it, though. I guess he was, what, partially digested by the Sarlacc pit?
Yes.
That's, I guess, how the show starts, right? Is we show him getting out of the Sarlacc? Is that... First, it flashes back to episode two.
Yeah.
With Daniel Logan Boba Fett holding his father's helmet, right?
Yep, we see a flash of that. We see a flash of Kamino.
And then he's inside the Sarlacc.
Yes.
Which is essentially just a giant digestive tract that somehow digests you over a period of 1,000 years. And there's a stormtrooper in there. And I don't...
Yeah.
I don't know how there's a stormtrooper in there, except for Jabba runs Tatooine. And... The Empire sends its representatives there to throw their weight around, as it often does. And Jabba probably wouldn't tolerate that kind of thing. So I'm able to explain it away that way. Why did you suppose there's a stormtrooper in that?
Well, I just assumed that, you know, there were stormtroopers on Tatooine looking for the droids, you know, C-3PO and R2-D2 back when Luke Skywalker was there. And there were probably stormtroopers. And I don't think the only meals that the Sarlacc gets is provided by Jabba. So he might have just walked into it or fell into it or who knows. That's kind of what I was assuming. That.
Okay.
But yeah, I was a little bit surprised. You know, you think you would have seen a Wiigwe or something like that in there.
Yeah, he goes to the stormtrooper. He sort of crawls through this esophagus that he's in and he pulls out a breathing tube from the stormtrooper helmet, right?
Right.
And is that to help him breathe or to power his weaponry?
I think it was to help him breathe, which I don't know how he survived because he kind of woke up and then stole the oxygen from the stormtrooper. But it could have also been, maybe he wanted more air and then I think he used it with his flamethrower, right? I think he used the oxygen and the flame to roast the inside of the Sarlacc. And then you see somebody said that Patton Oswalt should have gotten some money from Lucasfilm because, you know, they have the scene where it pans down from the twin sons and you see the wreckage of the sail barge and the Sarlacc pit. And then Boba Fett pushes his fist up through the sand and then pulls himself out from the Sarlacc pit.
Well, obviously somebody had seen that Parks and Recreation and said, let's do it exactly like that.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure his phone hasn't stopped ringing since that episode came out of people wanting to talk to him about it. Yeah, he's all covered in sand. And like goo. Wet sand, because he's like, yeah. Imagine you're all covered in Vaseline and then you roll in sand. And I know Hasbro's going to do it, but don't make a figure of sand-covered Boba Fett, guys. We're never going to see a figure of that Ithorian mayor or the Flashdance Twi'lek, but we're going to get a sand-covered Boba Fett. I know it.
I'm hoping we get a figure of 88.
Yes, that would be cool. And we never have, at least in the 6-inch scale. And the last time they made an 88 in the 3¾ scale, I want to say was 1996 or 7.
Wow.
Which is a long time ago in action figure days.
Yeah.
Anyway, you talk for a minute. I feel like I'm just bogged down in minutiae.
Yeah, so he gets out onto the surface. But then he collapses because he's been half digested and he's tired from coming out. We see him laying there, and then we see a sand crawler show up and all the Jawas come out, and they pretty much just take off all of his armor and leave him there in his underwear or whatever.
I think they whack him in the head too.
Yeah, he starts to wake up and grabs one of their legs, and then they just hit him with the butt of a gun or whatever and knock him out again and take off. With all of his stuff.
And to add insult to injury, I think one of them says Utini. Oh.
Oh, yeah. Not a very nice way to treat somebody.
But that's cool. I mean, they're setting that up, right? That was from Cobb Vanth, right? Said he had...
Right. That's where he got it from, was the Jawas. That's where he got the armor from. So that tracks with what we've seen before. And then he's revived again by some sand people, by the Tusken Raiders, but they're not particularly doing it out of the kindness of their heart either. They tie him up, drag him behind. Well, he's walking for a good part of it, but eventually falls down and gets dragged by a Bantha. And they're kind of in a herd of Banthas driving him back to their home or whatever. So he's pretty much a slave now to these, or a prisoner at least, to this band of Tusken Raiders. They tie him to this post that's buried in the sand, and eventually, or maybe he was there for a while, but a pink-skinned Rodian is also a prisoner there of the Tusken Raiders. Of course, once he kind of gets his strength back a little bit, you know, he's looking for a way to escape, so he's trying to cut off his bands and run away, and he wants to help the Rodian too, but the Rodian kind of alerts everybody to what he's doing, and he tries to run away, but they capture him again. Yeah, so he just has to go through this, you know, being their prisoner and their slave. And they have these little pods that are buried in the sand that have like a water or milk, kind of like a coconut, but it doesn't look like a coconut. Of course, they won't give him anything to drink, but they take the Rodian and Boba Fett out to go harvest they're supposed to dig in the dirt and harvest up these little melons, black melons, I guess they call them. So they're doing that. And again, he's looking for ways to escape. But the Rodian, as he's digging, digs up like a hand, a humongous hand of something. And I don't know about you, but I was thinking, oh crap, it's a crate dragon. Because we'd seen one of those on The Mandalorian. But then I thought, no, it's too small to be a crate dragon. And then this really cool monster that looks like the creature, his head kind of reminded me of the creature of the Black Lagoon, but he was really strong and he had like six arms or something like that. And just a giant monster. And he comes out and he's trying to eat the Rodian, but they're chained together. And so Boba gets dragged into the fight, and then of course he's going to attack the guard, the Tusken Raider guard, the Rodian gets killed, I think. And then Boba is able to use the chains and get on the back of this monster and choke it to death. It's a pretty cool scene. I really like the way, I think it was stop motion, the way they did that scene with that monster.
Yeah, it really reminded me of a Ray Harryhausen creation.
It did. It did, yeah.
It reminded me a lot of the Kraken that he made for Clash of the Titans in 81, which also had four arms. I'm sure it was intended to resemble something that he made.
Yeah, good homage to Ray Harryhausen. So that was pretty cool. And then, of course, by doing that and protecting the Tusken Raider guard, he comes back and he's celebrated as a hero, as a warrior or whatever. And the leader of the Tusken Raiders comes over and he gives him one of those black melons. And it's pretty much his acceptance of him as a guest of their tribe, maybe not a member of their tribe yet, but an honored guest instead of a slave or a servant. That was the first episode, The Stranger in a Strange Land. That's how the flashback ended in that episode. But there's a lot more that they cover in the second.
Yeah, it's all about him sort of rising up in the ranks of this tribe of Tusken Raiders. There seems to be, I got the impression that there was a male leader and like a female leader, whether she was his wife or, I don't know that she was female, but she seemed to be, and she is the one that is really good at hand-to-hand combat. She sort of takes
she is.
Boba Fett aside and shows him how to fight with a gaffy stick, and she's better than him, but he trains long and hard and until he gets good with it. I thought that was interesting. And for a moment there, I almost thought, oh, there's going to be some kind of romance here with this Tusken Raider. Did you get that impression as well?
I didn't really, but after the episode and I heard people talking about it, a lot of people thought it was going to be a romantic relationship there. And some people even speculated that this was Fennec Shand and this is where she came from, but I don't think that's the case.
Huh, that's interesting. I'm not even 100% sure it is female, but it's...
Yeah, there's a woman, the Tusken Warrior, and it's played by Joanna Bennett. So I'm pretty sure she's
okay.
Female.
Then there's that. We haven't seen the end of these characters, so I suppose it could go any way. But it has this really strong Dances with Wolves feel to me. I mean, all of the two episodes felt like Westerns.
Definitely.
But the second episode sort of, you know, has a train heist kind of feel to it. We've seen that in Westerns as well. It could also be, you know, attacking the stagecoach in a Western as well. There was a scene in the first episode where they saw some bikers, essentially, who are on speeder bikes.
Oh, yeah.
Attacking some moisture farm. And it broke my heart because they like break some mechanism and water just starts fountaining out.
Yeah.
And I just thought, Owen and Beru, that's like a month's work for them. And that water is just being wasted. The idea of wasting water is really upsetting to me. And I guess it's just because of the way Luke Skywalker was raised.
Yeah.
And in this second episode, Boba Fett goes to Anchorhead. I was going to say he goes to like a mechanic shop.
Outpost.
And these bikers are there bothering people, you know, just making trouble and throwing their weight around and being bullies. And Boba Fett decides to take care of it. And he just, it's neat to see him beat up these guys and then he steals their speeder bikes.
Right.
But the thing that excited me there was that in the Anchorhead shop are Cammy and Fixer from the 1976 scenes that were not in Star Wars. But the fact that it was them and recognizably them, even though it's been 42 years, something like that,
Right.
Maybe longer. I my math is terrible. But I just thought, what a cool thing to do. Because how many people know Cammy and Fixer? Seriously.
Yeah. Yeah, I recognize it, you know, because he kind of has an Indiana Jones leather jacket on. And I remembered that from the deleted scenes from Star Wars, the original Star Wars. So, yeah, that was neat that they did that.
Yeah, it's just a deep dive for, like, the diehard fans who just eat this stuff up. And Boba Fett takes all of the captured speeder bikes back to his tribe. And the first thing they want to do is just, like, destroy them.
And right. They start taking them apart.
I don't understand that, except for, I guess, you know, it's like these are the weapons of the outsiders. Basically, it's like, well, we don't want to use the artifacts of the white man. And he's like, whoa, 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 whoa. No, you can use them. And it will make you more powerful. So we get a scene where he trains them to drive a speeder bike.
Yeah, kind of a little montage scene.
Yeah, there was a scene earlier where a train came through and there were all these sharpshooters in the train that killed a bunch of the Tusken Raiders. And Boba Fett has this idea of, with these speeder bikes, we would be able to stop that train from doing this.
Not only were they killing Tusken Raiders, they were killing the Banthas. I was like, oh, come on, leave the Bantha alone.
That's a good point. The Banthas are so well done. I'm pretty sure those are practical effects.
I heard that one of them is, and then they duplicate it.
Okay, excellent. And yeah, in 76, they dressed up a poor Indian elephant in this thing in Tunisia. Yeah. But yeah, nowadays, I don't suppose you'd have to dress up anything. It could just be a puppet. But the rest of the episode is made up of this train heist. And you said that they were called pikes, is that right?
Yeah, pikes is the species or people or whatever.
And they're spice runners, so pirates essentially, right? Or
yeah.
They're driving this train through the desert, and he has brought these Tuscans on the speeder bikes to do the thing that you do with the horses alongside the train. And then you leap off your horse onto the train. It was really thrilling and fun to see that go. The only thing that I didn't like about it is that there was a droid conductor of the train.
Oh, right. Little spider
but
droid
I,
thing.
I didn't find him to be a compelling design. He was just like a super CGE robot. It was something that I didn't recognize. Maybe he's from the Clone Wars cartoon. But yeah, you're right. He was spidery because eventually they grab him and they either throw him out or he jumps out on his own and then he scuttles across the sand.
Right.
In a crab-like motion or a scorpion-like motion. And I did like that.
So they eventually are able to take over the train or they destroy the engine or whatever and it crashes. There's still a bunch of pikes on board or whatever. And they take them out and they try to justify themselves by saying, you know, hey, we're just protecting what's ours and, you know, we don't trust these Tusken Raiders. But obviously, they're a little bit more overpowered and probably took joy in doing that. And Boba pretty much tells them, well, this is our territory. If you want to come through our territory, you're going to have to pay us. Turns it around on them and, you know, tells them they need to walk back to civilization and they're going to take everything. And we actually see Spice, which we've heard about Spice and we've done all kinds of things, but I think this is the first time we actually see what the Spice looks like. And it's just, you know, it's obviously just a powder, a red powder or whatever, but I think it's interesting that we've talked so much about the Spice, but we've never seen it.
Yeah, you know as well as anybody that the Spice must flow.
Yes.
But speaking of that, they knock this lid off on the train and water just starts spraying out.
I know.
Yeah. Again, it upset me so much to see this precious, precious water going to waste.
And the Tuscans are trying to fill up containers with the water, but still most of it's going on the ground.
Yeah. Does that bother you as much as it bothers me when the water just gets wasted?
It does, especially on a desert planet like Tatooine, because that's based on Dune, right? And there's so much in Dune about how to preserve water and all that kind of stuff. That, yeah, to waste it like that is concerning at the least.
Okay, yeah, you're right. That there is so much in Dune about that and about the suits recapturing all your moisture and you know, every time you go to the bathroom, that's good because you're going to be able to drink that in a minute.
Right.
But I think that's where the episode ends, if I'm correct.
Oh, no.
No? Okay, well, tell me what happens next.
Nope. Then
you got to understand that I watched this at 2 in the morning. So
okay. So we go back to the Tusken camp, and once again, Boba has proven himself loyal and courageous and has given himself. And so the Tusken leader says, I'm going to give you a gift. And he has this little container, and he opens the container, and this little lizard comes out. He's like, well, that's kind of odd, you know, a little lizard. And then the lizard jumps out of the container and jumps up into his nose, into his brain, I guess. And then the leader blows spice into his face as well and says, I don't know what he says, something like, you need to find yourself or whatever. And
so, go on walkabout.
Go on a walkabout, essentially, yeah. So he's on a vision quest at this point. You know, he goes walking away from camp. He's high off of his mind, and this lizard is guiding his thoughts or whatever. So then we kind of go into his vision, you know, what is he seeing out there in the desert? And the sand is kind of like waves of the sea, you know, and they said, I think in this episode, that waters used to cover this land. You know, it is literally a sea. The Dune Sea was with water. So we see the sand like waves of water, and he's having some flashbacks back to, you know, his father's death and those types of things. And the things that have been a stress in his life. And he comes upon this tree, and I didn't realize, I just saw a bunch of red eyes behind the tree, like, you know, evil creatures or whatever. But when they showed the concept art, it was a bunch of Jawas, I guess, behind the tree. But I didn't know that until I saw the concept art during the credits. Anyway, so this tree starts to entangle him and, you know, bind him or whatever, and he has to fight against it. And all of the anger and all of the bad things that have happened to him in his life are coming out. But he's able to break free of the tree and in this vision. And then he comes back to the camp holding a branch of the tree. And he comes back, and the leader comes up to him or whatever, and the little lizard comes out of his nose and jumps back into the container. And, you know, he says, pretty much says, what now? And then they take this branch that he has, and they take him to this weapons guy or whatever, and they make, he helps him to carve and work this branch of the tree into his own gaffy stick. So that was pretty cool. Then they wrap him in these cloths and robe, you know, pretty much he's becoming one of the Tusken Raiders, a member of their camp. And I think that's where it ends at that point after he... Oh, and then, you know, they're at the campfire, and him and another Tusken Raider start doing this little dance with their gaffy sticks. And then the whole tribe stands up and starts doing this like a ritualistic dance or something like that. And I'm guessing, I'm not sure, but I'm guessing that that is based on, you know, the Maori tradition or whatever that Temuera Morrison would be familiar with. But I'm not sure about that. But that's my guess, is that part was based on Maori lore.
Yeah, it's funny because until you mentioned it, I had no memory of any of those scenes. But once you mentioned, like, the lizard, I knew the lizard was going to go in his nose, et cetera, et cetera. But he brought something through the vision? Is that what you're to understand? Or there really was a tree out there?
Well, I don't know. I think there really might be a tree out there. You know, they are burning stuff at their camp, and so there must be wood somewhere, unless they're burning bantha dung or something like that. But, yeah, I thought that, I was trying to think of that. I'm like, I've never seen a tree on Tatooine. I mean, he brought a branch back, so there must be something out there.
Okay. The idea of bringing a branch from your vision into the real world is super mystical to me, and I'm okay with it either way. I didn't know how to interpret it.
Yeah.
Plus, like I said, I was sleepy. So.
And then I had mentioned Lawrence of Arabia. There's a scene in Lawrence of Arabia where Lawrence helps the Arabs to take over a train that's going through the desert.
Ah, okay.
And so that's where that comes from. But I had forgotten all about that. That's a movie that I'm going to have to watch again because I was pretty sleepy during when I watched Lawrence of Arabia. But but one thing to note is that Alec Guinness is also in Lawrence of Arabia.
So. Okay, yeah.
But a lot of people pointed that out, that, they took that from Lawrence of Arabia. I was like, really? And then I'd seen something where they showed the scene. I'm like, okay, yeah, that's pretty close.
Well, just like Star Wars was made up of various influences, from the Hidden Fortress to the Searchers, you can get all sorts of influences on each of these episodes. And yeah, his Maori heritage probably adds something, just in the same way as there are Native American references and then movie references and Arab kind of things. It's really fun to see what's going with this. And there's already all sorts of rumors flying about what other kind of flashbacks we're going to see on the show.
Right.
And I'm not going to vocalize any of them because who knows at this point what they're capable of throwing in there. I only hope that we see Bosk at some point.
Right.
But I know you have to go to bed. So in closing, I'm just going to say that I wasn't thrilled with the first episode, but I was thrilled with the second one. And, you know, I look forward to the third one. And there's going to be seven of these.
Right.
And so anything that you want to say before I let you go to sleep?
Yeah, the first episode, I thought it was, you know, it was fine. It was good. And I really liked the monster at the end. I thought that was pretty cool. But as far as what's going on in Tatooine now, him being the gang lord, I guess even with the second episode, I'm still not too enthralled with that. Or I don't care too much about whether he's going to succeed as a crime lord or not. I'm hoping that there's going to be more there that's going to pay off. I guess, you know, we did get Black Kersantan, so that promises for more fun. But I am interested to see maybe in the flashbacks, you know, how him and Fennec Shand, what happened there. Did he know her before she was almost killed by the Mandalorian or the other guy or whoever it was? Or did he just happen upon her after she was killed? So I'm kind of interested to see if they flash back to that.
So you think that they'll show their first meeting or they'll show him nursing her back to health?
Yeah, something like that.
She was killed, right? Or, I mean, what was it? He replaces part of her with cybernetics?
Well, I don't know. They've never explained that. They just kind of showed her stomach or whatever, and it had something there, like robotic parts or something. Yeah, I'm hoping to get some explanation of that, I guess. Because I think, you know, with all the focus on Boba Fett, I mean, she's there too. Fennec Shand is always with him. But I'd like to see her featured a little bit more in the here and now.
Yeah, she's great. And she didn't have a lot to do in the second episode.
Yeah.
But it's possible that they are thinking about giving her own show, you know, in the same way as they gave.
Oh, yeah.
They decided they were going to give Echo from Hawkeye her own show. I would much rather see a Fennec Shand show, but we'll see how that goes. Yeah, I was going to talk about like some of the rumors that I've heard of flashbacks that we'll see, but we can talk about that if and when they happen.
Yeah, it's still weird for me to have him take off his helmet so much, not because of the Mandalorian, because we understand why the Mandalorian kept his helmet on, but just for 40 years, you know, that we've seen Boba Fett, he was always just the mysterious guy in the helmet, but I understand they can't do that, especially in the flashbacks, but it is weird that, you know, he takes his helmet off so much. You'd think he'd want that mystique and use that menace or whatever, but apparently he wants to rule with respect instead of fear, so.
Well, your compassion will be your undoing. Wait, what was it?
Yeah, something like that.
Anyway, it's Star Wars, and I'm happy to get more Star Wars, and I'm eager to see where it's going. And so we'll see. I saw an interview with Ming-Na Wen and Timura Morrison where it seemed like he was eager to reveal who was going to show up later on. And it might have just been a gag where she's just like, oh, you can't say anything. But, you know, he said there'll be some colorful chaps showing up later on. And then there was a hashtag that showed up at the bottom of the screen, colorful chaps. I'm assuming that that's for Twitter. So I went to Twitter and I typed in hashtag colorful chaps and I didn't get anything. Did I do it wrong?
No, that should have been how you did it. Huh.
When I typed colorful chaps, there's not supposed to be a space, right?
No, I don't think so. Because if, yeah, space breaks the hashtag.
There's one post is just some fan saying, you know who's a colorful chap? And I've already forgotten his name. Cad Bane.
Oh.
But yeah, that's hardly evidence of anything. Maybe I'll post something on Twitter. I'm trying to get the hang of this Twitter thing. And I'll put a hashtag colorful chaps as well.
There you go. But yeah, so far I've enjoyed it. Maybe not as much as The Mandalorian yet, but I'm very intrigued and I'm kind of like seeing the journey of where he's going with the Tusken Raiders and stuff. So, and I guess maybe that's why they call it the Book of Boba Fett, because it's these excerpts from his life after the Sarlacc pit or something like that. He's definitely a different Boba Fett than we're used to.
Yeah, I agree. And we talked about this, I don't know, years ago, that I like my Boba Fett as a villain.
Yeah.
And so I hope that there is that he doesn't lose his edge, that there is still a violence to him and a ruthlessness to him. And also, I want him to be crafty the way that Boba Fett was in the original trilogy, where it's just like,
yeah,
he was able to capture Han because he was smart. He figured out what Han was going to do where the other bounty hunters didn't. And so we'll see that, hopefully.
Yeah.
How he is able to outmaneuver these other forces that want control.
And we'll be here after it's over to talk about it. We've never been a timely podcast, but I don't think that matters, because, you know, even though tomorrow night the third episode is going to come out, this will come out after that, of course, because we're just recording it now. But I think people will still want to hear what we have to say.
Okay. Well, thank you once again for hanging out with me and talking Star Wars. I know that it's late and you have to be up early. You know, you jumped on a thermal detonator here.
Yeah, it was good to talk about it. And we'll get this out. And yeah, I'm looking forward to watching more Book of Boba Fett. But yeah, if you have your theories, you can email us at journeyintopodcast@gmail.com. You can also call the voicemail line at 77JN2107. And if you want to support the podcast, head on over to patreon.com/journeyinto and support us there, see what we have to offer. Also support Rish Outfield over at patreon.com/RishOutfield. So he's been reading lots of older ghost stories and I've been enjoying that. So I encourage you to go over there.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm glad you are enjoying them, because there are so many more that I recorded. I started recording like one a day every time I'd go to the cabin. So the whole year is full if I run every single one.
That's cool.
There's that. And then you and I are also going to get together again this week, and we're going to do a Delusions of... No. We're going to do a Journey Into episode.
Right.
So our listeners can look forward to that as well.
But yes, there will be more of Rish and I together for sure this month. So hope everybody has a good week, and we'll talk to you in a couple more episodes of the Book of Boba Fett.
We're no good to you, Dad. Good night.
Good night, everybody.
Confectionarian Wilro Hood said you were coming. He told me your show was the best, that you cut out 5 minutes of arms in every episode. Forgive me if I am a bit skeptical. They say that it is done under a Creative Commons 3.0 license. That one can download it, listen, and share it, but not sell it or claim the files for oneself. I hear podcasting is a complicated profession. Don't you agree?
Something I didn't tell you, but I'll go ahead and tell you now, is that I went to a panel at Comic-Con back in September where there were a bunch of folks who had played really small bit parts on Mandalorian. And one of them was a stunt double for Din Djarin, the Mandalorian himself. And they,
oh, okay.
There were four of them, and they all played like certain parts. One of them was the woman who played the armorer.
Okay.
And they revealed on their panel that all of them are in Book of Boba Fett.
Huh.
So all of these guys are probably stuntmen or mimes or whatever you would have to be under monster makeup or under a helmet. And I would assume they just use them over and over and over again.
Well, yeah, because they could probably have the Boba Fett suit on too and do that. So